Good afternoon. This is Tamara, reading the Gilman Star for the week of January 27th. We'll start as usual with the As We See It column, which is a little different today. Your editor and his bride are spending time somewhere warmer to celebrate their anniversary. You're stuck with the editor's daughter this week for As We See It. Mom, Jan, sometimes has to drag Dad, John, away in order for him to take a break. They like to escape every year around their February anniversary. When my brother and I were kids, it used to tick us off because they left us home on these trips. They wanted us to go to school, and Mom and Dad wanted time together when they didn't have to parent. But still, how dare they go without us? Now that I have two kids of my own, I completely understand. Within a year of my younger kid being born, I asked Mom at what point she'd be comfortable having both kids so my husband and I could get away. We decided my parents would be comfortable with keeping both overnight when maybe both kids were fully mobile and potty trained. Now that they are fully mobile and potty trained, they are really active and curious, maybe too active and curious for their septuagenarian grandparents. But really, though, we're not attempting it now because there aren't many places we can go with pandemic restrictions, and we have been focusing our energies on moving and settling into the new house for the past year. Speaking of moving, I realize now why it's one of life's top stressors. First, there was the stress of getting the old house ready to sell. It was a lot of work, but it was rewarding. My husband and I went through the house with a fine-tooth comb, painting every nick, fixing all deferred maintenance, and decluttering like mad. Then there was choosing a realtor. We went between two. One we realized was a little too intense for us when we compared the level of help he could offer in real estate to a lawyer defending someone for murder. Dude, that's way over the top comparison. We just want to sell our house. There was the stress of picking the right house. No house was 100% perfect, and we saw houses that we really liked get snatched up before we could put in an offer. We ended up making an offer on one that was a front runner for most of our search. Not 100% perfect, but we can make it perfect for us. The actual move wasn't too bad as far as stress, because we had already pre-packed before putting our house on the market. Packing was easy. Also, we hired movers because we didn't want friends or family inadvertently exposed to COVID. Plus, we're all getting older and helping someone move is harder. It was expensive, but we saved money by having everything ready to go for them. Oh man, it was fun to watch them too. They just loaded 5 to 6 heavy boxes at a time and wheeled them out to a truck like they were nothing. They wrapped the big stuff with blankets and plastic wrap. They were even careful with the piano. They arrived around 8:30 in the morning and had us in the new house by 2:30 in the afternoon. It was amazing and worth the extra cost. Next comes settling into the new house. We painted most of the first floor before we moved in because we hated the colors, so more painting would come later. We unpacked quickly because my husband couldn't stand the boxes. The most frustrating part of the first few weeks was knowing which light switch went to which lights. Finally, there's adjusting to living in a new city. I didn't think it would be a big deal. I've worked in Pekin for about 13 years, and my husband grew up there. My mother-in-law lives here still. I know my way around, but it's different navigating a town you work in compared to a town you live in. All your routines change. Also, I laughed to myself about my answer when someone asked me, "What is Pekin known for?" If someone had asked that of Gilman, I could say farms and I-57. My stepfather-in-law and I bonded over knowing K and H. If someone asked what Peoria is known for, I could say Caterpillar and the hospitals. What is Pekin known for? I don't know. Pekin Insurance? Their old mascot, the Chinks? The former I don't really know much about, and the latter isn't a source of pride. I do know that this is home now, and it will be a good home. My kids are close to one set of grandparents, at least, and my kids go to good schools. Pekin has good resources, stores and restaurants, and if they don't have something we want or need, Peoria is not that far away. We're making the house our own. And we've got so much more space inside and outside. When COVID restrictions are over, we can have people over for socialization. I miss a lot of friends and family. So yes, the transition of moving is stressful, but the outcome is well worth it. And now the Iroquois County COVID-19 update from Public Health. We'll be looking at zip codes, the number of cases January 19th, and increase or decrease as of January 26th. Gilman had 281 and increased to 284. Clifton, 249 to 251. Ashcombe, 148 to 149. Danforth remained at 81. Onarga, from 212 to 226. Watsika, 532 to 544. Crescent City, 62, remained at 62. Sister Park, 172 to 173. Fayetteville, 34 to 37. And finally, Piper City, 113 to 118. The lab confirmed cases, 2,268. Test results, 35,033. Negative, 32,379. Positive, 2,268. Deaths, 57 cases. Of the confirmed cases, 2,555 have recovered and been released from isolation. 3 are hospitalized and 39 remain at home. There's a photo on the front page of Mama and her twin donkeys born in Onarga. And the following information was sent to the Gilman Star by Shane Cultra of Onarga. Twin births are extremely rare in donkeys, with only a few pairs currently known in the world. It's thought about 1.7% of donkeys will have twins and only 14% survive. The mother donkey, Molly, went into labor on Inauguration Day, and the twins, Biden and Harris, were born on January 21st, 2021, at Carrot Kills Farm in Onarga, which is owned by Mike Willis of Orland Park. My son-in-law and daughter, Cole and Lindsay Ishmael, manage the farm. I thought it would be a fun fact to link to our community. Shane. Eugene Merkels are married 70 years. Pat and Jean Merkel will mark their 70th wedding anniversary on January 27th. They were married in the Immaculate Catholic Church in Gilman in 1951. They have been blessed with 10 children, 19 grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren. Their family has observed that they have kept God in their marriage, have loved and respected one another, used teamwork to accomplish projects, always had patience and a belief that it will all work out in the end. They now live at Bales Lake in Loda. A baby boy was born to the Woodmanseys. Zach and Hillary Woodmansee of Buckley are proud parents to have a son, Rhett Joseph, born on January 12th at Gibson Area Hospital. Rhett weighed 5 pounds, 14 ounces, and was 19 and a half inches long. He was welcomed home by his big sister, Ray Lynn Marie, age 2. Maternal grandparents are Tom and Valerie Stroshine of Gilman. Paternal grandparents are Tim and Lisa Woodmansee of Buckley. Maternal great-grandparents are Tom and Debbie Konoski, and maternal great-great-grandmother is Margaret Konoski, all of Onarga. Son born to Zavalas. Maria J. Reyes and Jose A. Zavala are the proud parents of a son, Roman Alberto Zavala, born on January 20th at Gibson Area Hospital. Roman weighed 8 pounds, 11 ounces, and was 21 inches long. He was welcomed home by Eleni Zavala, age 5, and Amir Zavala, age 1. Maternal grandparents are Jose and Elvia Reyes of Onarga. Paternal grandparents are Jose G. and Maria F. Zavala of Onarga. Keister and Hodolitz welcome a baby girl. Taylor Keister and Michael Hodolitz of Danforth are the parents of a baby girl, Madeline J. Hodolitz. She was born on December 31st at 7:28 p.m. at Amida Hospital in Kankakee. Madeline weighed 8 pounds, 11 ounces, and was 21 inches long. She was welcomed home by big sister Clara Ray, age 2. Maternal grandparents are Taryn Rodriguez of Gilman and the late Dan Keister. Paternal grandparents are Ruth and the late Michael Hodolitz, Sr. of Woodland. Maternal great-grandparents are Marv and Marla Ritzma of Danforth. The Thawville American Legion will be having a fish fry Friday, February 5th from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Drive-through only. Please enter from Main Street from the West End. And now a column from Jim Nolan. Why are we so angry? What can be done about it? At the post office the other day, where all of us in my rural town go to pick up our daily mail, A friend asked, "Why are we so angry, Jim?" By we, he didn't mean him and me, and I could tell, even with his mask on, that he was concerned. Anger is not new to America. In April of 1968, as a junior officer in the Army, I was among those ordered hurriedly to assist the Illinois National Guard in staunching the rioting on Chicago's west side, which was literally ablaze in the wake of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Surreal. In August of that fateful year, thousands of Vietnam War protesters stormed Chicago. They set upon provoking violence successfully from Chicago cops who occupied a different world from the long-haired liberal provocateurs. Indeed, days of rage. A major difference, to me anyway, between those violent episodes and the recent assault on our U.S. Capitol is that the grievances back then were clear. Today, nobody seems sure why, and thus my friend's question. I suggest the following as among the underlying resentments of those who protest the present state of our union, whether violence prone or not so. The rise of minorities and women. The latter are now far exceeding men in achievement. Until recently, white males had both groups under their thumbs. Rising income inequality. Since 1966, average family income for those in the bottom two-fifths of the nation has been flat, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In contrast, income for the top fifth has more than doubled, from 7 times to 14 times more than those in the bottom fifth. Rural America is generally struggling, indeed hurting. Many who live in this flyover country like their laid-back small-town way of life and don't want to leave, yet they sense they are also being left behind by those in the plugged-in big cities. Many who are struggling economically may feel a sense of guilt that they could have, should have done better in school. But we humans can't blame ourselves, so we project our shortcomings onto others. Over the past century and beyond, blame has pinned onto international bankers. Now it's the elites, they feel, who are trying to lord over them. But the biggest factor in generating anger, or so I contend with later research to confirm me or not, is the melee of intense, often provocative, sometimes violence-tinged information that comes via social media. The human brain craves information. The reptilian brainstem at the base of our heads is constantly scanning the horizon for threats and opportunities, that is, information. That is what has kept us alive. In the center of our squishy, grapefruit-sized brain is our limbic system, which for jillions of years has been mediating our emotions and such as our flight or fight decisions. At the front of our brain is the frontal cortex, the thinking part of our noggin, which has been developing over more recent millions of years. The frontal cortex, the various parts of the limbic system, and the reptilian brainstem are all in constant communication, neurons caroming hither and yon. The frontal cortex advises the limbic system, you might say, but the latter often ultimately controls our decisions. Pertinent to all this is the concept of group polarization. As the Harvard scholar Cass Sunstein puts it, when people find themselves in groups of like-minded types, read liberal or conservative or radical social media echo chambers, they are especially likely to move to extremes. I contend the constant stream of reinforcing messages within these echo chambers can overload the brain, causing the equivalent of electrical storms in our limbic system. These storms can unleash unthinking passions, even violence among some of us. So what to do? The following is tentative and insufficient, needing much more reflection. Freedom of speech is cherished, central to our being as a nation. Yet it has been regulated in the past via what was called the Fairness Doctrine. Enforced from 1949 to 1985, the doctrine required that broadcasters present contrasting viewpoints. Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms have become, given their incredible popularity, like broadcasters, in the public interest. So maybe something along the lines of a fairness doctrine for social media programming that is focused on political discourse. Or, related, maybe independent panels of citizens to review the effectiveness of Facebook and other social media in washing hate and violence-inciting content. And certainly that from mischievous foreign sources from their platforms. Finally, and less controversial, we need to beef up civics education from grammar school through post-high school programs. the apparent ignorance of the rule of law and democratic processes reflected in much discourse I see and hear is deeply troubling. For many years, Jim Nolan was a senior fellow and political science professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. He has worked for 3 unindicted governors and published a weekly newspaper in central Illinois. In this edition of the Gilman Star, there is a 2020 obituary recap listing a summary of obituaries that have run in the Gilman Star. Where known, the date of birth is also listed. Now a column from Russ Mann, Change of Command. With the inauguration of Joseph R. Biden as 46th president, begins the formidable task of righting the ship of state, after deliberate scuttling attempts were made by the outgoing administration. It also begins the traditional task for Republicans of finding fault with everything that President Biden and the Democrats do so the Republicans have something to run against in 2 years. That has already begun. President Biden hit the ground running against the greatest threat to Americans, the pandemic. But there is no stop button to push. By inaction, ignorance, apathy, whatever it was, the last administration allowed COVID-19 to gain momentum. And as everyone with a basic scientific knowledge knows, with the weight of 25 million cases of COVID behind it, even with the vaccine, it will take a Herculean effort by the medical scientific community to slow it to a stop. In 2009, when Barack Obama was sworn in as the 44th president, the GOP, led by Kentucky Senator and Minority Leader at the time, Mitch McConnell, swore an oath to oppose anything Obama. Their fixation was with Obama's signature accomplishment, the Affordable Care Act. Obamacare, as it became known, protected 22 million Americans from medical bankruptcy and became an obsession with Republicans. That preoccupation has continued even during the worst pandemic in U.S. history. Yet vowing to replace it with something bigger and better became just another empty promise. Then in 2015, Mitch McConnell became Senate Majority Leader and has since earned and relished his title as the Grim Reaper. Legislation advanced by the House of Representatives have gone to Mitch's Senate to die. Bills desperately needed dealing with health care, the economy, immigration, the environment, infrastructure repair, and more recently the GOP-led Senate has pushed back against pandemic relief for people facing homelessness, food insecurity, and no health insurance during a pandemic. Democracy was in limbo. Meanwhile, while in the driver's seat, Mitch and company put all their effort toward tax breaks, gifts to the nation's richest people, and stacking the federal courts with conservative judges with the intention of consolidating partisan power and advancing Republican agenda. Republicans like to portray themselves as being the fiscally responsible party and had railed incessantly against Obama's $580 billion deficit, while their tax cut to the rich and to corporations ballooned the deficit to $3.3 trillion. Supporting Donald Trump as president became a part of consolidation of power, as Republicans who vehemently opposed his candidacy in 2016 suddenly fell into line after he won that race. Recognizing that Trump had built a cult-like following of supporters willing to break laws and even attack the nation's capital on marching orders from Trump, Republicans in Congress lived in fear of falling out of favor with their Führer. When President Barack Obama attempted to exercise his presidential authority near the end of his last term and nominate Merrick Garland as Supreme Court Justice to replace the deceased Anton Scalia, the GOP led by Mitch McConnell said it was too close to the 2016 election and we have to wait nearly a year and let the people decide. But in 2020, when the people decided, Republicans supported the Trump lie that it was not a legitimate election and tried to get the election results and the decision of the people overturned. Never mind that bipartisan election officials in all 50 states verified and ratified the election and results. Several GOP congresspersons were in full support of the violent attack on the Capitol that resulted in 5 people dead and some insurgents wanted more to die, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Vice President Mike Pence. Mitch McConnell has since admitted during a speech from the Senate floor that Trump had provoked the Capitol riot. The mob was fed lies, McConnell said. They were provoked by the president and other powerful people, and they tried to use fear and violence to stop a specific proceeding of the first branch of the federal government, which they did not like. other powerful people was likely a reference to GOP Senators Hawley and Cruz, who were complicit in the coup attempt. McConnell's views appear to sharply disagree with House GOP Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who attempted to buffer Trump's blame by saying, "Everybody across this country is to blame for the Capitol attack." Really, Kevin? Those Americans appalled and disgusted by what they saw were somehow responsible? In the coming days, we will see if McConnell's dedication to his constitutional oath supersedes his loyalty to Trump and party. The Trump empire was built mostly on marketing the Trump brand and charging people for putting his name on their buildings. That's not likely to happen now. After 4 years of ravaging our way of government and overriding critical protections for both domestic and international, his name is not only no longer sought, but is avoided. Trump once remarked that being president wasn't as much fun as his earlier life. Now likely he may live to regret ever deciding to run for presidency. ICPDH vaccine clinic fills all appointments. We received both of these releases on Thursday, January 21st, within less than 3 hours of each other. By the time the second notice was received, the appointments to be made for Tuesday, January 26th were all filled. We will do our best to keep you informed of upcoming vaccine clinics as soon as we receive the information from the Iroquois County Public Health Department. COVID-19 vaccination clinics for qualifying Iroquois County residents. The next upcoming clinic, January 22nd, was filled by appointments. The clinics will serve Iroquois County residents in Phase 1B of the Illinois Mass Vaccination Plan, including anyone 65 years of age or older. As we have no obituaries or death notices for the week in the paper, we'll continue with local news and columns. And now by Alan Weber, Biden's perverse sense of unification. So much for the unity promised by the new president during his presidential installation. In China Joe's first 72 hours as president, he set about undoing nearly everything he could to remove Trump's presence from the Oval Office. This was the equivalent to showing his backside to the 74 million people that didn't vote for him. He would have gotten more done, but his 8 p.m. bedtime prevents him from getting more completed in a day. There were 33 executive actions signed by Biden, many of which were reversals of Trump executive actions. By now you've heard the pros and cons of most of them, but suffice to say, they were hardly unifying. In fact, most of them were nothing less than a thumb in Trump's eye, and by extension, us deplorables. Stopping construction on the southern wall at a time when there was a caravan of 8,000-plus Hondurans headed our way during a supposed pandemic, and everybody out of work defies logic, didn't seem very unifying either, unless you're Honduran. Immediately halting production of the Keystone Pipeline and other oil drilling initiatives will drive oil prices higher, affecting us all for the next 4 years. What was the hurry to toss all those folks into the unemployment line? We will now pay more for gas, for cars, heat, and for goods shipped due to increased oil prices. At the time of this writing, oil, which is highly speculative, is up $5 per barrel since January 3rd. And then there is the fact that the Dow Jones has been flat since Biden took office, hopefully not an unpleasant omen. Meanwhile, House dingbat Nancy Pelosi continued her crusade to impeach Trump, which Biden declined to address. By doing so, he missed the fact that another impeachment will only serve to slow down his unification agenda. Jobs and COVID be damned, Pelosi has to chase after Trump some more to prevent his stain from ever getting near her swamp again. Pelosi's obsession for Trump seems licentious in nature. She acts like a high school cheerleader whose boyfriend dumped her to go to the prom with a prettier gal. Does she not understand Trump is no longer president? How unifying do you think another impeachment will be? The only unity coming out of what essentially is shaping up to be a third Obama term is that politicians are settling back into their comfy nests in the Washington swamplands. They are content to be unified with themselves again, living like royalty off the back of taxpayers. Trump is no longer in town making waves near their bog. You will start hearing the term bipartisan again until you vomit. It will mean nothing. Is it any wonder Mr. Kinzinger appears to have sold his soul? Is it unity when the only partisans in a presidential installation are family and Congress? Well, there was that matter of the 2000 of the 26,000 National Guard troops invited, seems secret intel had been learned those nasty Trump deplorables were going to incite riots, ransack the Capitol, and ravish the Biden women. This was all due to Trump's reported seditious acts from January 6th, when he allegedly ordered his supporters to plunder the Capitol. Funny thing happened on January 20th, though. There were no riots or acts of sedition in Washington, D.C. during Biden's installation, nor in any of the state's capitals, as foretold. How could that be? Deplorables were going to overthrow the newly installed government. Perhaps in an act of unification, it might be time to drop the silly impeachment shenanigans and reflect upon that whole January 6th protest in a less non-hysterical context. The only rioting going on currently is by the Soros-paid Antifa BLM thugs in the Northwest. Is it far-fetched to question if they were also involved in the Washington, D.C. protest on the 6th? Why hasn't this information been released of those arrested? Or should we just continue to blame Trump for all the country's ills and ignore the Hunter Biden scandals, which Biden will surely do? If you really think that might be a track to unification, then you're going to be sorely disappointed. Naysayers will be pointing out that my antagonistic remarks of the Biden installation are not unifying either. Heard it before. The differences mine are just words from one good-looking fella. My opinion is not able to reach into your pocket or change our country. You don't have to read my column, but you do have to pay for whatever harebrained scheme or false premise politicians dream up. Trump cost you nothing. After the 4 years of hell we lived through, courtesy of the Trump deranged, deplorables have no intention of initiating unification. The left, Democrats, and liberals will need to reach out first. Nothing seen so far by Biden's handlers has been unifying. Bridge Diagnostics at 525 East North Street, Unit F, Bradley, Illinois. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. No doctor's order or appointments required, and test results for COVID-19 are provided within 24 to 48 hours. The test is zero out of pocket when billed to your health care plan and zero out of pocket when billed to the federal program for those who are uninsured. You can pre-register at bridgediagnostics.com, COVID-19. For a quick and easy visit, use access code BRIDGECOVIDTESTING. Call 815-614-3513 with any questions. From Elsie Kuntz, a thank you. I would like to thank everyone for the cards, phone calls, and well wishes I received while in the hospital and since returning home. Thank you, Elsie Kuntz. SIUE 2020 Fall Dean's List. SIUE is a nationally recognized university that educates and develops professional and community leaders through its excellent faculty and programs. Undergraduates who meet high academic standards are included in a Dean's List issued each semester. To be eligible for the Dean's List, a student must maintain a grade point average of 3.5 or better and have 12 hours calculated, B is equivalent to 3, A to 4.0. Area students include Clifton Benjamin, John Hoogstraat, Danforth, Elizabeth Michelle Albrecht, Gilman, Brandon David Olson and Nathan Scott St. Peter, and Onarga, Hannah Jo Fink. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of January 27th. Have a great day, and I hope to read with you again soon.